Basketball Hall of Fame coach Red Holtzman died Friday night at the age of 78. He had leukemia. New York Times sports writer Ira Berkow described Holtzman as the architect of one of the most unusual, most thrilling teams ever assembled, the Knicks team that included Willis Reed, Bill Bradley, Cassie Russell, and Dave DeBuscher. Holtzman recruited most of the team members when he scouted for the Knicks. In 1970 and 73, Holtzman led the Knicks to their only two NBA championships. When Holtzman retired from coaching in 1982, he was second to Red Auerbach in the number of victories in regular season play. He started his career playing with the Rochester Royals and the Milwaukee Hawks. I spoke with Red Holtzman in 1987 and asked him to describe the techniques he used to get the best performance out of his players.
Well, I think the most important thing that we tried to do when I came in was to get them to play a brand of team basketball that would help us. I felt that you get teams that don't play as a team, no matter how much talent they have, they're not going to be a winning team. So that was the first thing we had in mind, is to instill pride in being part of a team type of thing. And the next, almost as important, is to get them to play good team defense. So very often your defense makes your offense, and these are the things that make for good teams. Those two things. And then to put your talents in the team and use it together, do all the things together. And that's what they did. They were a very, very intelligent group.
Did that get harder to do over the years? Did it get harder to have the players really function as a team, as opposed to just going for their own statistics?
I think it did. I think it got harder over the years because the money became more of a factor. The money got, you know, very, very big, and you couldn't blame players for wanting to make more money or striving to make more money. And a lot of them thought that the only way to get it was to shoot a lot and score a lot. Of course, that was not always true. If they didn't have the ability to do that, they fell by the wayside. So I think that the money factor took away from that aspect of the game a little bit. But, of course, still the good teams do these team things and do these team defensive things together.
Do you think that fans appreciate good teamwork as much as they appreciate someone who can make a lot of baskets, do a lot of shooting?
I think they like to see outstanding players, and they like to see players do outstanding things on an individual basis, but they like to see good team basketball, and they like to see good team basketball if it gets results. If you're out there and you're not getting results, then they're not going to buy it. They're going to say, yeah, that stuff doesn't work, you know. And but the thing is that if it does work, everybody is a part of it, and they're proud of it. You know, all of a sudden we know something that somebody else don't know, you know, and we're pressing. Our defense was a pressing type of defense, and it was working. So that was a great thing.
Was there something that you always felt, well, if I were a coach, I would do it this way? Something like that you actually were able to put into effect once you started coaching?
Well, I think that, you know, that's inherent in everybody that's been involved in anything. You know, if you really love it and are serious about it, you're always thinking about something that you would do that would be better than what's being done. And my background was with, you know, people who had me play this type of defense, this type of basketball, this type of stuff that we did in the schoolyards in Brooklyn, you know. And I played for guys like Nat Holman, who was a great coach at City College, and I played up in Rochester. You know, so all this stuff was based on the team stuff, passing the ball and helping each other, playing good defense. So It was in my background, you know. It was always there, and I always felt that was the number one way to go.
Whenever you watch a basketball game on TV, there are, of course, cutaways from the court to the coach on the sidelines, who's shouting and screaming and urging on the players. Did you dread those cutaway shots to you?
Well, I didn't dread them because I was too busy trying to do what I could do. But, you know, you have to have a lot of ego, and you got to be a little crazy to be a coach, you know, and you got to make a fool of yourself occasionally. So we all did that. But the cutaway shots were part of the business. And the only thing I didn't like about, and I wouldn't let people do it, is take their mic Mike's into the huddle, you know, the timeouts and things like that. I figured we ought to have some secrets, you know, and everybody say, oh, boy, I wonder what he's telling him now, something brilliant, I suppose, you know, and maybe I'm telling the guy to get the bus warm or something, and we'll be out, and we're going to go to dinner early or something like that. But you got to have some secrets, and that's one thing I didn't go for.
Back when you were a scout, you were scouting at at Grambling College, which is a Southern Black college. And in your book, you write that it was interesting that all the players were Black, but a lot of the white students from nearby colleges had come and were cheering on the students from Grambling. And you said that you thought this really foreshadowed how the NBA would change. Would you explain that?
Yeah, well, at that time, Grambling played some of the best basketball around, you know. That was before all the big colleges were taking Black players, and they really had the best players in the country. We got Willis Reed from Grambling, and the people who were basketball fans who wanted to see good basketball came to Grambling. They went there to see it, and all these great players were being watched in the small colleges. Didn't make any difference where you went. You went to see the best players, and that's where they were. So I think that this was a sign of things that were going to happen, and it was great.
Well, I think when you started playing, there were virtually no Black professional players.
There were almost no Black professional players, except some teams that were entirely Black teams, like the New York Renaissance, who were a great, great basketball team, and the Harlem Globetrotters and the Washington Generals. They had some great, great all-Black teams, but in the National League and later on, actually, the Rochester Royals, who were owned by Lester Harrison, the guy that owned my team there, was the first man to sign Black players. He signed two great Black players out of New York, Dolly King and Pop Gates. And he was actually the first man to do that. And I think it's to his credit because, it was a start and it helped.
Now that you're retired, are you still doing any consulting?
I'm a consultant. I'm available to be consulted. I hope it's about basketball, because otherwise we'd be in trouble. But I'm available. But, you know, the trouble with being consulted too much in basketball is that you're not there every day. You know, you're not in on the daily things that are happening. So it's a little difficult. But a consultant is a guy that you might ask something once in a while. But basically a consultant is a guy that you owe money to. And
an interesting definition. I'll remember that.
Remember that. That if you ever get old enough to get a consultant's job, grab it. It's a great job. The Knicks have been very, very nice. They treat me with a great deal of respect, and it's just a joy to go to the games at the Garden. And my wife and I have a lot of fun, and it keeps us busy. And if I'm there and I can help, I'm always glad to do that.
Red Holtzman recorded in 1987. He died Friday of complications from leukemia. He was 78.